legislative reform. What we're going to do today is to hold a public hearing on three bills, SB 700, SJR 1, and SB 456. We are not going to take any action today, and there's a couple of reasons for that. There is a distinct difference of opinion as to whether or not we can do this all statutorily or whether we need a constitutional amendment. And I'm getting pretty smart lawyers on both sides of that issue. I may, in fact, need to ask for an AG's opinion, Mr. President, and get authorization to pay for that. If we can do this statutorily, it certainly simplifies things all the way around. But, we just don't know at this point. With that, I thought we'd start off with a little review of where we are on this package. And Marjorie, why don't you go forth and do that?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll just review all three bills and the amendments that you have in your packet. Senate Bill 700 is a combination, basically, of Senate Bill 50 and 51. Senate Bill 50 is actually in this committee. We've had a hearing on that bill, and that revitalizes the Public Officials Compensation Commission. Senate Bill 51, which is actually in the Senate Rules Committee, has to do with the limitation on the use of campaign funds. Those two concepts have been included in Senate Bill 700, and the Dash 1 amendment just clarifies that the limitation on the use of campaign funds would begin on July 1st, 2009. SJR 1 is the constitutional amendment that would be paired with Senate Bill 700 at this time. And again, that just puts into the Constitution that a commission would set the salaries for elected officials and also sets forth some timelines for that commission to report those salaries back to the governor and the legislature.
And judges.
The Dash 2 amendment conforms SJR 1 to the current version of Senate Bill 700 by deleting references to district attorneys. Senate Bill 50, which was sent to you by the Public Commission on the Oregon Legislature, included district attorneys in the list of elected officials who would have salaries set by the commission. However, Senate Bill 700 does not include them. Senate Bill 456 is the judge's salary bill that we had extensive testimony on the 13th of February. And we have two amendments in your packet. Each one establishes judges' salaries for half of what they requested in their report called the Judicial Compensation in Oregon Need for Reform, and that was produced by the Task Force on Judicial Excellence.
Yeah, half the increase.
Half the increase, that's correct. The task force recommended that circuit court judges receive $125,000 per year and that all other judges receive a comparable increase. And so that increase was approximately 30%. And so what we've included in the amendments is approximately 15% of what is currently in statute, a 15% increase. However, the Dash 1 amendment reconnects legislator and judges' salaries on July 1st, 2009, as right now this bill disconnects judges and legislator salaries. The other option is the Dash 2 amendment, which just altogether leaves in the connection between legislative and judicial salaries.
And for the benefit of the committee and the folks that have come to listen, the issue of disconnect or not disconnect really, I think, now is moot. I've learned some things about how legislative salaries are currently set, and they are not necessarily tied to 17% of a circuit court judge's salary. What they are is they're set one step below the maximum of salary range 1 in the management compensation plan, or 17% of a circuit court judge's salary, whichever is greater. And currently, the one step below salary range 1 is greater, and that's why legislators receive $1,534 a month. If we gave the judges the 15% increase and then kept our salaries coupled, 17% of that new level would give us a $30 a month raise to $1,564 a month if, in fact, salary range 1 were frozen. Salary range 1 will not be frozen. It'll go up with a COLA. And so disconnecting from this change really makes no sense. And so that question, I think, has been, in my mind anyway, has been pretty well settled. Whatever we're going to do, we're going to stay connected at this point. Other questions of me or of Marjorie before we...
I do.
Yes.
So you're advocating that we stay connected to the judge's salary, just to reiterate?
We stay connected, yeah. There's no benefit to not stay connected.
So we send out this bipartisan citizen task force, and the most it's going to change for people who don't live in the Willamette Valley is potentially $30?
No. Once the commission is constituted, the commission will recommend a higher, I assume, a significantly higher salary.
But not if it's coupled.
Mr. Chair and Senator Atkinson, the Senate Bill 700 disconnects the legislator and judge's salaries.
Okay.
Once the commission starts taking effect and making its recommendations, whether those would be effective in July of 08 if it's statutory or July of 09 if it's constitutional, then that changes the way our salaries are calculated and disconnects them. They would then be set by the commission, not a certain percentage of judges' salaries. What we're talking about is between now and whenever that happens, what would our salaries be?
Time to get up.
Okay. Okay, with that, then we'll call the first witness. Cappy Eaton. And Norman Turnell. And, yeah. Cappy is with the League of Oregon Voters.
Yes.
Good to see you again.
Thank you. Good to be here.
She lives at the Capitol.
She's got nothing to do with us.
And with me is Norma Turrell, who is chair of our action committee and vice president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. We have some comments
to both of you.
He would like to make. Thank you, Chairman Rowe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy Eaton. I'm the governance chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'm not going to read you my testimony. I did testify with you before. On Senate Bill 50 and SJR 1, and we, at that time, the committee had quite an extensive discussion about the fact that we all needed to link the problem of legislative compensation with what the salaries of legislators were able to be eked out to cover their other expenses. So it was a discussion about how legislators could use their campaign funds. And we are very pleased that the committee now has linked those in Senate Bill 700. We feel that's very important. And certainly that was part of the discussion in both the Public Commission on the Legislature and the Oregon Law Commission, because those were two very sticky problems, and we feel that Senate Bill 700 addresses those very well. We do feel that Sections 1 and 2 through A and D of 700 we support. We certainly support the Public Officials Compensation Commission. However, we have some concerns about Section 1.3b, because that allows a candidate to use contributed funds to make contributions to other candidates and political committees. The League feels that this may be a wider distribution of campaign funds than perhaps the individual who contributed the money had intended, if you allow candidates to have that much free rein. Other than that, we really support Senate Bill 700, and as Chairman Rose pointed out, you may be able to do it statutorily. That would be fine. However, if it does go before the public in a vote, the League would certainly support that referendum. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Turrell?
I'm Norman Turrell. I'm the first vice president and action chair of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. From Portland, Oregon. I wanted to repeat a point that I made when I testified on Senate Bill 10, that the League would like to see a bright line between public office expenses and the expenses of running for office and campaign funds. The League feels this separation is very important, and this bill, I think, would go a long ways to enabling that kind of separation. I've seen various grousing from legislators about how would they actually allocate their campaign funds or their public office funds for different expenses, if they're staying overnight at a motel where the purpose is actually for both, or driving out to Burns, or have a cell phone that needs to be used for both campaigning and public office expenses. Well, I want to let you know that business people face this problem all the time. When they go on a business trip, they want to know, can they allocate part of this for business and part of it for personal use? Is a cell phone that they own personally that's used for business purposes also going to be expensed for their business? And they do that kind of allocation. And it's not that difficult. So I think with just some common sense thinking about the kind of allocation that would be necessary, this can be easily separated and there will be a bright line between them. Thank you very much.
Questions of the witnesses? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. I think a bright line is in the eye of the beholder, quite honestly. And as somebody who has a different cell phone for business and a different cell phone for politics, and has lived so excruciating, I will not even allow one thing state-sponsored in my house. I won't allow the computer in my house. I won't allow the email account in my house. Or my home office, because of this very reason. And I personally find it offensive in the SMS here that we've got in here written personal use, because what that does is that says that we're all guilty as charged. And I find actually your testimony to say that we're all guilty of something. When, let me tell you how this stuff really works in the real world. This job is a net loss if you don't live in the Willamette Valley. It doesn't even pay your gasoline bill. And so if I am campaigning or if I am going to give a speech in La Grande, it is a personal loss under what you're proposing under the bright line. Would you concur with that?
Chair Monroe and Senator Atkinson, I would not want to have your job. It's a very difficult job, and allocating these kinds of expenses between different purposes is certainly not always as bright as I would like to see it, but it can be done. And there's nothing illegal that is being done now, and I don't mean to imply that there has been anything illegal or that anybody is guilty of these things. It's currently public law that these kinds of things occur. The difficulty arose in last session where there was double dipping occurring and was brought out, and that didn't have to happen and could be separated, I think, using Senate Bill 700.
Mr. Chair, if it's double dipping, then call it double dipping. What this thing says is that if you don't live in the Willamette Valley, which I have to tell you, most people in my party don't live in the Willamette Valley, you're somehow unethical. And I find that highly offensive. Look, I'm not going to do this forever. I love the institution and the process. I love it. But you know what? There is nobody like me who can put themselves through college, start a business, not allow one state-sponsored piece of equipment in their house, and still be come up of guilty for how I had paid my stupid gasoline bill. So I'm worried about the people, the legislators that come after me. And what we're about to do in this bill, colleagues, is we're going to make it another fine, make it legislators guilty of something. We're going to say you're all evil, you're all rotten, we're all going to do whatever that takes. Unethical, all that garbage. And then we're going to decouple it for about a year and a half between the time where we come up with a recommendation on salaries. And what you're going to do is you're going to have an entire another campaign cycle, long after me, we're going to have a whole another campaign cycle where people cannot run for the legislature. Who in their right mind would do this job? You get beat up by lobbyists. You get beat up by the media. You get called unethical for paying, as Doug Whitsitt did, $30 unreported for a hotel bill. $30. Takes 3 days out of his life, drives 690 miles, up, pays for it all himself, $30. He gets strung up as unethical. So I think you're on. I just want to say all that, and I appreciate you being here, but this isn't good. Because it just throws everyone under the bus because it's politically popular.
Senator Avakian.
I appreciate very much the topics that are coming up with respect to this. And even if there's differing opinions about it, having a frank, open, public discussion about these things I think is incredibly important. I wanted to make a comment, and you can feel free to respond too, on the ease or the bright line in defining some of these expenses, and I'll give you a couple examples where I find it difficult. One of them would be that if I am, for instance, leaving the Capitol driving home and call my spouse on my cell phone because she helps keep the schedule between my law office, our personal schedule at home, and the legislative schedule, it's a very, very difficult thing to coordinate. So I may call her and talk for 15 minutes about my legislative schedule for the next day, and then we might discuss for a minute who's going to pick the kids up from their dance lessons, and then we might talk about the appointments I have with my law office on Saturday. And then I would have to decide whether or not that phone call was legislatively related, business related, or personal. And if we were to decide it was legislative related and I'm doing that on a personal cell phone on my personal time, then is that some kind of an in-kind contribution to the state because of, you know, what I was using? Or if it's campaign related, and we're talking about the schedule on the campaign, is that an in-kind contribution to the campaign that I need to report? Similarly, and that type of a thing happens 30 times a day. Similarly, very few of us in taking the extreme pay cut to do this have got the amount of money to buy computers to put everywhere we need in order to do the job well. And so if I go home and use my personal computer at home to do either campaign business or legislative business, then similarly, am I using something personal and therefore having some kind of an in-kind contribution to either my state operation or the campaign? And if I decide that it's probably campaign related and I use campaign funds to buy the computer, and then I use that for the campaign, but because we don't have enough computers through the state money for all of our staff at the Capitol, I decide to bring it to the Capitol, then am I in some way doing, again, using campaign funds for an impermissible purpose in the Capitol? Well, I can tell you, even with the great efforts that the legislative administrators have done this time to give us more tools, laptop, computer, and such, for those of us that have interns and those of us that have more than one staff person, it just is not enough to get the job done. So what we do is we beg, borrow, and steal equipment from wherever we can so that our staff have something to work on. So the question becomes, on the bright line, where are we using personal things for either campaign or legislative purposes and vice versa? Is a very, very difficult line to draw.
Chairman Monroe and Senator Avakian, I certainly appreciate the difficulties of being a public office holder in Oregon, and the League is certainly in favor of sufficient compensation for public officials and expenses for your office. And I don't see how we could run a government without appropriate compensation and expenses. But common sense separation of personal and campaign and the public office expenses is not that difficult, and it's done every day by businessmen trying to separate their personal and tax-related expenses and expenses that they can charge to their company. And I think if everybody kind of gets over themselves and looks at this as a businessman would, it would, I think, be a big help.
Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Chairman. You know, I'm curious. This must have been discussed somewhere, but the statement was made that one of the reasons we should restrict this is that someone who makes the contribution is unaware that it may go in different areas. So if I write a solicitation letter that says that I'm soliciting funds for my campaign and for expenses of the president's office, so that the individual knows that if they make a contribution to me, that I could use that money, or, you know, just lay out what you're asking for, my campaign, campaign of others, or the expenses of the president's office. What about that? Since the point is being made that the person who's making the contribution is not aware of all the places it might go, so you need some truth in lending. What about that kind of approach?
Senator Monroe, Senator Courtney, I believe that the distinction that we're trying to make is that not what you're citing, where you were running your campaign and with the expectation that you would be reelected as president, or you are currently serving as president. I don't know that that would, I'm not sure about the division for that. What we are concerned about is if I give money to a candidate, mm-hmm. it's my expectation that that candidate will use it for that candidate's expenses during the campaign and not give it to other candidates to expend. That's the line I was trying to talk about.
Thank you, and I understand that. So if my letter that comes to your house says my campaign or others, then you're on notice, should you choose to contribute to my campaign, that I could use portions of it, some of it, whatever, for my campaign as well as others. Then what about that? Providing I in my solicitation letter clearly lays out, I'm asking for money for these reasons, then you make the decision on your own after reviewing that letter, yes or no, in terms of this individual.
Chairman Rowe, Senator Courtney, I think that would have to be expressly addressed in the bill then, that if, depending on the solicitation for campaign funds, it was understood that the money that you were soliciting could be used very widely. But I think many people who contribute do not have that expectation. They expect that the person to whom they contribute is going to use that money for their own campaign.
And Chair, if I just may respond, I think you're right. And I was trying, though, to speak to a more straightforward statement in my letter to fully explain. It's like charitable organizations. When you contribute, you think the money is going to such and such. We've had instances where more of it's going to administration, to the call. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm saying here's a situation where the individual is bound by law or administrative rule or whatever. And I don't, again, I haven't discussed this with anyone, but I've long wondered about it. If I fully disclose, and I'm not playing games, I don't mince around the words, where possibly your contribution will go should you choose to support me in my letter or make a contribution to my letter, if that makes a difference. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having a discussion with me.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Chairman Rowe and Senator Courtney, I want to also point out that the restriction that the Oregon Law Commission has suggested on this point doesn't prevent a person from setting up another political committee to receive funds from wherever and use it for whatever purpose. The restriction that they've suggested is just on principal campaign committees. And in their philosophy, what they've said is that the money that is contributed to a principal campaign committee is not the candidate's money, but belongs to the campaign. And this shift in perception should happen. I'm paraphrasing here, but
Mr. Chair, I have to follow up. So you're suggesting, I won't pick on him, let's pick on me. So after I win, if a good senator wants to set up a new political campaign to get money between when the election date was, we'll say November 7th and January 8th, to pay for his office expenses, that would be appropriate?
Or if you wanted to run for state one office and shift the money there.
Personal the expenses, the things that we, Senator Axton was talking about, should the individual want to set up a separate campaign, and collect money between November 7th, I'm picking the exact date, and just say November 8th when we went in, and say, you know, to pay for, have money on board to pay for travel, for gas, etc., that would be appropriate?
So, Chairman Rowe and Senator Courtney, the restriction that's in this bill is that you could use your campaign funds to set up an additional campaign for another office. I'm not sure that's what you're asking about, though.
No,
but if you wanted to set up another political committee and solicit contributions to that political committee that is not a principal committee, then you could use those funds for whatever purpose that's allowed by law.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I guess I should jump in here a little bit. I see it as blatantly unfair that some legislators who live in safe districts, who can be reelected time after time without expending any great amount of money, who therefore can raise way more money than they need to get reelected, and thus have that money available for other uses, bolstering their staff in their office or supplying their office or whatever other use, that it's unfair to those legislators that live in marginal districts that have to fight bitter campaigns every 2 years or every 4 years, have to expend every dime they can scrape together and beg from their friends to get reelected and have no extra money, then would have to use personal money to beef up their office and their staff and so on if they wanted to do that. I just think that's an unfair situation. What ought to happen is the legislature ought to provide members with sufficient resources to staff their office at an appropriate level and supply their office at an appropriate level, and sufficient resources so that legislators can attend conferences that are important to their job, such as the National Legislative Conference and so on, or the Western States Legislative Conference. That's what ought to happen, and then there wouldn't be the necessity of using campaign money. And then when the voters give campaign money to anybody's Friends of Whoever committee, they would know that that money is going to be used for an election, for elective purposes. That's the purpose of Senate Bill 700. And for it to work, we're also going to have to recommend, and we will, through the Legislative Bill 5522, that staffing levels and supply levels be appropriate for members. Does that make sense?
Senator Morrow, you make my point.
Yeah, that's what we're trying to do.
Yes.
And that's my purpose in preparing this bill and so on. Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. And I would like to apologize for the staff boo-boo of sending you memos that said this meeting started at 8:30 instead of 7:30, huh?
No. It's for a different meeting. We just have to end at 8:30.
Oh, we have to end at 8:30.
Yes.
That's what it says. Okay. We're supposed to end at 8:30. So I guess we better get going. Janice Thompson.
Good morning. I'm Janice Thompson. I'm with the Money and Politics Research Action Project. I'm also here with the hat of having been an invited member to the advisory committee to the ethics work group staffed by the Oregon Law Commission through the interim. So I want to start with expressing wholehearted support for the increases in legislative pay and judicial pay provisions of Senate Bill 700, as well as SJR 1 and Senate Bill 456. As Chair Monroe mentioned, a very clear part of this recommendation from the Law Commission's effort was to link increased regulation on use of campaign funds to increase pay, adequate office expenses. And in the testimony I had the last time I was here, I also raised the issue of needing to take a look at per diem expenses with a particular focus on making sure that folks that do travel farther are adequately compensated for that, to address some of the issues raised by Senator Atkinson in terms of, and I'm, so that I think is a piece that did not come up during the interim activity, and I mentioned it the last time I was here. I wanted to stress it again because I think that's a really important piece of this, is that the per diem allowances also aren't enough and need to be really adjusted for fairness in terms of distance traveled and things like that. And there are a number of states that do have a distance differential in per diem, and I think that's another really important piece of this. And I think in that environment, then you can achieve the goal to have, you know, as bright a line as possible. The discussion here indicates the difficulties of that. But I think that's, you know, I think this whole session has been about really taking a look at all of these issues and being as... getting over a cold here, sorry. It's moving forward on these ethics issues as possible, so I think that's the direction you need to go. In addition, just a quick comment on this Senate Bill 700 not including provisions from either Senate Bill 51 or House Bill 2597 from the Law Commission with regarding pass-throughs. As was mentioned before by previous witnesses, I think this bill would be stronger with that. I do recognize, however, this is a topic that may be at best be factored into a broader discussion about contribution limits and campaign finance reform. So there's a way in which, you know, you can't do everything. The Law Commission got some criticism about, well, why they didn't deal with campaign finance reform. I think it's very appropriate that they did not. So I think that's a scope issue. The other thing that I added last time I was before you, I wanted to reiterate, is a concern, particularly since another Law Commission recommendation is to allow the formation of a legal defense fund, is to also not allow campaign funds to be used for legal fees, just as they're currently the discussion about not allowing use of campaign funds for penalties. But I want to wrap it back up to, again, I think the bottom line here is the need to increase the judicial pay and as well as legislative pay, and that all this needs to be considered in the environment of increasing office expenses and as well as looking at the per diem allowances.
Ms. Thompson, with respect to per diem, the legislative compensation or the compensation commission that's created by this package of bills specifically has the authority to recommend changes in per diem. And I would agree with you that they ought to take into consideration distance traveled, distance from the capital, in adjusting per diem, as many states do. They will have that authority once they are constituted and up and running. And they'll have the authority to adjust those on a every 2 years. Questions for the witness? Senator Atkinson.
Thank you. A couple questions. Would Senate Bill 700 prevent executive branch members from raising a ton of cash after a campaign and doing pass-throughs?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Atkinson, right now with the allowance for pass-throughs, yes, that's allowed under current law, and it could continue under Senate Bill 700.
So we all read how much money the new speaker raised for his PAC from the business lobby. Mm-hmm. And I think, and I don't really follow it that closely, but the governor's, is it the bull pack? Or the governor's pack raised a lot of money, whatever it's called. So they wouldn't be prevented from being the sugar daddies, if you wouldn't, so to speak, to their party members across the executive to legislative branches?
Chairman Rose, Senator Atkinson, that's correct.
Okay.
The pass-through restrictions in Senate Bill 51 and 2597 would not allow the pass-through of those dollars through principal campaign committees. What they could do is actually, in the case, you referred to bull pack, and now it does have another name. Actually, I believe that is not the governor's principal campaign committee, and that then is an example of what would be allowed even with the law commission. So I want to correct an earlier comment. I think the thought here is just to make, to help clarify that when the contribution is going into a candidate's principal campaign committee, it's kind of being used by that candidate. And the, but as an earlier witness indicated, part of the reason that pass-through is acceptable is because it does not restrict an elected official or a candidate to form an affiliated, it would be a miscellaneous PAC, and that would be, and I think that in the case of the governor's PAC, it is clear what that is, and it kind of gets at what Senator Courtney was mentioning, you know, that the fundraising pitch is clear. This is no longer like for my, you know, campaign effort. So that actually, but the pass-throughs from a principal campaign committee to another committee, or from a principal campaign committee to another candidate, to a miscellaneous PAC, to a ballot measure PAC, that those things that would be addressed by the Senate Bill 51 or the House Bill 2597, whereas the executive officer, anybody setting up a, I believe, former Speaker Minnis, in addition to her principal campaign committee, had what was called a speaker pack at that point. And that was, an affiliated. So those are that's the kind of thing that would occur with the principal, the restrictions being focused on the principal campaign committee.
Thank you.
But as written, Senate Bill 700 doesn't even do that.
Okay. One more question. You made a good testimony on legal fees not being paid for with the PAC, but I have been in the position of almost using those funds for legal fees during redistricting, in which, I got 300 people to show up, say don't do this, and wham, I lost my house. So there were several cases at that point regarding the partisan nature of things. And under this bill, I wouldn't have any recourse with those dollars, even if people wanted to contribute to, say, redistricting defense fund, or in my PAC being used as a redistricting defense fund. Under Senate Bill 700, you're taking a legislator wouldn't have that ability. Is that right?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Atkinson, right now Senate Bill 700 doesn't address legal fees, and I believe it should. And in the case of the scenario you're describing, I think that actually is another example why another recommendation for the Law Commission allowing the formation of legal defense funds makes a lot of sense. I think in that case, that would have been, or in some future scenario, if that option was available to you, that would have been the vehicle for you to, that would have made the most sense for you to use. There's a whole process, to kind of set that up and the reporting of it. And I think that's a really good example about why, again, the Law Commission is recommending this whole other option related to legal defense funds. But it's in that context that it seems like legal fees need to be clearly then not something that it's allowed for use of campaign funds, because that other option is there.
Mr. Chair, just a comment to the board, to the committee. Several weeks ago, we had a very good discussion about what I call the rusting of the institution of the legislature. Over time, we've allowed the institution to crumble. We've allowed the salaries to crumble. We've allowed the building to crumble. We've allowed our staff to crumble. And the restrictions that we do because we're politically we're the easiest to pick on, so to speak. We never do that same restriction to the executive, and we never do that same restriction to the judicial. Our last test defense told us to get over ourselves. But it's important to know that and act like a business. Well, the fact of the matter is businesses don't run at a net loss all the time. I really appreciate your testimony because I think, you know, I could support various portions of this bill, but I cannot support where we just make it where we further restrict the pool of people who can afford to do this job, and we disconnect the timing of adjusting salaries with what's in Senate Bill 700 on personal use. Because I don't know, certainly we all know some members that have abused this, but for the most part, people are struggling so hard to make sure they never cross the line. But if there's one trip up, if there's one thing that hits the media, all of a sudden your whole reputation is slandered over $30 or, you know, something like that. We have to change that portion of what we do as we erode the institution. That's my biggest fear, is leaving it better than we found it.
Well, and that's what we're trying to do. And Senate Bill 700 clearly, closely, exactly connects the timing of any restrictions on campaign money with the timing of the implementation of the recommendations of the Compensation Commission.
Well, let me make one other follow-up, and it was to what Senator Vakian said. Is the solution that I've done for 8 or almost 9 years around here is not to allow anything state issued in my house or my office. Just my clear line that everyone's talking about is don't have anything to do with state equipment, phones, billing, anything that could be perceived as campaign related. Just don't even lit it in the house, which makes it harder to do my job. But that's how I have made the line in my office. People who've worked for me for all these years, that's how I keep it bright. I leave all the state stuff in there, in that office. I don't even go in there. I don't want to talk about it. And then I have somebody email me responses and work to my personal account, and that's how I do the job at home. Yeah, and you know what? That's how I've established the bright line. But you know what? That's not the best way to do this job.
Yeah. Okay. Senator Vakian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One comment and then one question, if I may. It isn't just the testimony we had today, but in many, many committees we hear this notion of operating more like a business, or if we just operated like a business, handled its accounts, it would be better. And the truth of what we are as public officials and as a government is that we are not a business. We don't operate like a business, and we should not operate like a business. We should be efficient. We should be responsible. But we don't have the ability to adjust what we do and how we use resources based on a profit margin. We have an obligation to do the job and to provide a guaranteed service to Oregon, regardless of what other market factors there are. And that separates us very much from what a business should operate like. Understanding that within our body, that kind of a unique obligation that government service is incredibly important. And I would like for us to talk about it publicly more. The question is a very interesting discussion with regard to principal campaign committees and others, and it's an important discussion. My concern are two. One is that when you restrict the principal campaign, but you allow another committee to be formed in order to pass through money, that there is the potential to vest great power in two or three or four individuals in the legislative body. that then controls the entire flow of money. And without some broader type of reform, that system, that's not a comment on any particular individual, but the system is one that can lend itself to something very undemocratic. And then the second piece to that is, what would prevent any legislator from having a principal campaign committee and then setting up the Joe Reynolds for Good Government committee and just passing all the money through there to themselves or to other people?
Chairman Rowe, Senator Vakian, in terms of your last question, I think that if their primary fundraising activity was not focused on what they needed for their own campaign, then they could exactly have a, you know, it could be the Janice Thompson for the governor committee, or the Janice Thompson, you know, for whatever, for Oregon committee. And if I really didn't have, you know, much of a contest in the primary, I could potentially do all that. What I couldn't do, I think, in that case, however, is just, or shouldn't be able to do, I'd have to, is to just funnel the money back to my own principal campaign committee. But I think, you know, this question and your earlier comment, I think, does speak to why I brought up the earlier point, which is potentially this whole conversation related to use of campaign funds might be better suited for a broader conversation about, you know, a more systemic restructuring of campaign finance and those kinds of options. Whereas I do feel that the restrictions being proposed in Senate Bill 700 related to use of campaign funds is appropriate in this current environment, with a focus on ethics reform in the context of, you know, dealing with the trying to come up with a bright line, coupled with, you know, the adequate resources, the per diem increases, etc. As a final comment, you mentioned I actually also really agree with you about being concerned about government not, you know, being equated with business practices. On this matter, however, I'll speak to you to it as somebody who runs a nonprofit organization. We don't make a profit. It's kind of amazing to me. I probably do make more money than you, but, you know, not too much as a nonprofit organization. And in this case, when I think about, you know, travel expenses and things like that, we have expense policies. And if I want to need to send a staff, myself or a staff person, you know, to a conference or to speak an event, if it's not in our budget, you know, to cover that, I don't expect that person to pay for it out of their pocket. Conversely, if, you know, they feel like, oh, I'm not being paid enough, and you know, it's not appropriate for them to kind of dip into our organizational till. So I think on that particular issue, it transcends, you know, it's just kind of, you know, clear practices in general. But I think that it comes back to the bottom line is the need to restore, I think, the crumbling. I mean, I think there just has been this erosion, and people need to recognize that to operate this building, people need have enough money and to be adequately paid. And like I say, I wanted to mention the need for the per diem adjustments as well.
Senator Morse, and then we're going to have to move along. We have another witness that we haven't heard from yet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be brief. I appreciate the comments and the testimony, but I would like to dispel the myth that you can draw a very bright line in this building as a legislator between business expenses and political expenses. It's impossible, folks. You can't do it. Everything we do in this building is under the political microscope. Everything we say and do is either building a case for re-election or not. It's a political environment. For example, my staff, in the interim, keeps my schedule. And people know to call her if they want an appointment with me. Okay? She's paid by the legislature. Is it a personal issue when someone wants to meet me on personal matters? I don't know. Or whether it's a business issue. If you go to speak in the district and you live 400 miles away, is that a political speech or is that representing the constituents and representing your district? It just gets commingled because of the political nature that we're in. And I tell you, I take great offense to have this body castigated because of very few instances, and we're all guilty. I take offense at articles in the paper that have criminal charges in the juxtaposed to offenses that members have made with respect to, you know, I mean, we get thrown into the criminal environment, and we get thrown into castigation by the public when the vast majority of this body is very, very conscious of ethics and doing the right thing. But this is a political environment. I come from the background of business. I managed a fairly large, complex business. And I understand business expense and I understand personal expense, but you can't draw bright lines and create myriads of rules in the political environment. It's just not possible to do. The more rules that we build, it begets more rules and it draws greater opportunities for members to be cast with a very negative light because something didn't turn out or look right. This is a tough environment. I tell you, I agree with Senator Atkinson. I don't know why people would want to come serve here. Excuse me, Mr.
Thank you,
Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Thompson. Mr. Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Nelson, representing the Oregon Judges Association. Chief Justice Domenech had intended to testify today, and I'm afraid I misinformed him inadvertently that we were carrying this. There wouldn't be a decision made today. He set something else, and he had meant to be here to testify, so I just wanted to apologize for that.
Actually, it turned out that you were correct, because for various reasons, we will not be moving on anything today.
So I just wanted to apologize, but he will be here at your next meeting.
And the Chief Justice has been in my office, I believe, four times since the beginning of the session. We've been conversing regularly on these issues.
I understand. Chairman, thank you.
Is there a question for Mr. Nelson? Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that wanted to be heard on any of these issues? Okay, the conversations will go on between the AG's office and Legislative Council's office and my office and Senate President's office. We'll try to get some of these questions answered so that we can go ahead and move forward with a good bill or package of bills. Is there anything more to come before us before we adjourn? Thank you very much. Thanks everybody for coming in this early day. We're adjourned.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Frank.